Republic lives on a knife's edge. When you're finished with it, you will no longer be David Webb. You may not even remember who he was.
You know why we're treating you like this?
Hello, Jason. I believe you've been having some problems. But they come down. You wouldn't be here if I didn't want to talk.
I've spent 3 years running. 3 years trying to find out who I am.
You're still not cut it all back, have you? Still not filled in the pieces.
It was always you.
I'm unarmed, Jason.
Why me? Why did you pick me?
You really don't remember, do you? We didn't pick you, you picked us. You volunteered. Right here. After your warning.
Captain Webb.
Good morning, Captain. You came in here. You didn't even blink, Jason. Just handed me these. Has everything been explained to you?
Yes, sir.
You said you wanted to serve. Your missions will save American lives.
I understand, sir.
You said I'd be saving American lives.
You were.
I was killing for you. For them.
He knew exactly what it meant for you. If he chose to stay. When you finish with you, you will no longer be David Webb.
I'll be whoever you need me to be, sir.
You cannot run what you did, Jason. You made yourself into who you are. Eventually, you're gonna have to face the fact you chose right here to become Jason Bourne. You haven't slept for a long time. Have you made a decision? Number one. You have to decide.
Who is he?
We've been through that.
What did he do?
It doesn't matter. You came to us. You volunteered. You said you'd do anything it takes to save American lives. You're not a liar, are you? Or too weak to see this through? This is it. Let go of David Webb. Give yourself to this program. Welcome to the program.
School for Assassins. The cryptocracies recruited their assassins from among people who had already demonstrated a violent nature, people who had few reservations about taking human life. No homicidal maniacs were recruited because they could not be controlled. The cryptocracy needed killers who would not murder on impulse, but only upon command. Once selected, the assassin candidates were turned over to the military, where, under guise of combat readiness training, they underwent a complete program of conditioning. Graduates of the program would forever act with ruthless efficiency. They would eliminate local political leaders in a foreign country, or undertake search and destroy missions in violation of national and international laws. They would be given a cover allowing them to enter the Foreign Service, or they would be posed as embassy Marine guards. In July 1975, the Sunday Times in London quoted a U.S. Navy psychologist who admitted that U.S. naval intelligence had taken convicted murderers from military prisons, conditioned them as political assassins, and then placed them in American embassies around the world. This admission came shortly after the Senate Intelligence Committee had scolded the CIA for plotting a number of political assassinations around the world. From the congressional reports, however, one got feeling the cryptocracy was being chastised for the assassination it had successfully accomplished, but for those which it had attempted but failed. The attempts on the life of Fidel Castro drew the greatest notice from the congressional committee and the press. According to the Sunday Times story, Naval psychologist Lieutenant Commander Thomas Nerud was assigned to the U.S. Regional Medical Center in Naples, Italy. When he first made public the Navy's part on programming assassins, he was attending a NATO conference in Oslo in Dimensions of Stress and Anxiety. In attendance at the conference were over 120 psychologists of all descriptions and from many countries. Many of them were involved in research on how to improve man's ability to cope with stress, but none of them felt compelled, as Nerud did, to discuss their work so fully or so frankly. The stated objective of this conference was to exchange information on how soldiers and people in difficult jobs could cope with stress. Dr. Nerud's talk was on the use of symbolic model and verbal intervention in inducing and reducing stress. His speech began with a plug for the Navy. He knew, he had said, like many of the scientists present, had often encountered problems in their purely scientific research because of the country's inclination to research that would yield quick and useful results. He sympathized with those who had trouble getting subjects funds, or both with the military for their purely scientific research, but things were different in the Navy, he said. In the Navy, Nerud bragged, there were plenty of captive personnel who could be used as guinea pigs. In the Navy, there was a computerized record of each man's background and psychological profile, so a quick selection of men with suitable psychological inclinations for experiments could be made. Navy psychologists not only had access to computerized records, but also to psychological tests and background data on a large number of people. In the Navy, Nerud said, funds were plentiful, and there were no problems with transporting subjects from study to nearly any place in the world. Nerud stated proudly that the U.S. Navy provided scientists with the most advanced research facilities in the world. A Canadian psychologist at the conference later remarked, Nerud's message was loud and clear. Join the Navy and study the world. In his brief discourse, Dr. Nerud did no more than hint at the work which he had been doing in teaching combat readiness units to cope with stress during killing. Later, however, during a private questioning with a small group of listeners, reporter with Peter Watson of the Sunday Times, a former psychologist among them, Nehru unfolded the amazing story of the Navy's programming of assassins on an assembly line basis. In his mid-30s, Dr. Nehru had just completed his doctoral dissertation on the question of whether certain films provoke anxiety and whether forcing a man to do irrelevant tasks while watching violent films would help him cope with the anxiety they produced. When pressed by Watson to explain the details of this kind of conditioning, Nehru said he had worked with combat readiness units, which included men being programmed for commando-type operations and for undercover placement at U.S. embassies. These, Nehru said, were hitmen and assassins, made ready to kill in selected countries should the need arise. Dr. Alfred Zitani, an American delegate to the conference, was very surprised by Nehru's disclosure. "Do you think Dr. Nehru realizes what he had just said?" Zitani asked. "That kind of information must be classified." The conditioning of Nehru's assassins was accomplished by audiovisual desensitization, a standard behavior modification process. These men were desensitized to mayhem by being shown films of people being killed or injured in a number of different ways. At first, the films would show only mild forms of bloodshed. As the men became acclimated to the scenes of carnage, they would see progressively more violent scenes. The assassin candidates, Nehru explained, would eventually be able to dissociate any feelings they might have, even from the goriest scenes they viewed. Nehru said that, of course, U.S. naval psychologists would have first selected the candidates for training by their psychological makeup. Those selected for assassination assignments were often from submarine crews and paratroops. Others were convicted murderers from military prisons who had already shown a proclivity for violence. Still others were men who had been given awards for valor. World War II Medal of Honor winner Audie Murphy was a subject of extensive research. The best killers, according to Rue, were men whom psychologists would classify as passive-aggressive personalities. These people were with strong drives, usually kept under tight control. Such types were usually calm, but from time to time would exhibit outbursts of temper during which they would literally kill without remorse. Nehru said that through psychological testing, he and his colleagues were looking for more such men for further conditioning. Among the tests used by the Navy to determine violent nature was the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, which is used widely by educators and businessmen to determine psychological qualities of students and employees. The test consists of hundreds of questions designed to measure such personality traits as hostile, depressed, and psychopathic. According to Rue, the men selected by this test were evidence of past violence were taken for programming to the Navy's Neuropsychiatric Library in San Diego, California, or to the Naples Medical Center, which employed Dr. Nehru. Audiovisual desensitization was the major technique used in programming assassins. Psychological indoctrination, completed with program by installing the desensitized, desired prejudicial attitudes. The audiovisual desensitization began with the subject strapped into a chair with his head clamped so he could not look away from the screen. A special mechanism prevented the subject's eyelids from closing, as depicted in the film A Clockwork Orange. The candidates were then shown a film of an African youth being crudely circumcised by fellow members of his tribe. The youth was circumcised with a blunt knife, painfully and without anesthetic. This well-known film is used widely in psychological experiments to create stress. Afterwards, the candidate was asked about details of what he had seen. He was asked, for example, to describe the color of the belt on the doctor's trousers or the motive on the handle of the knife which cut off the foreskin. The next film showed a man in a sawmill where planks were sliced from a huge logs. In the operation of the saw, the man slipped and cut off his fingers. As the films progressed in gruesomeness, the reactions of the candidates were measured by sensing devices. Heartbeat, breathing rate, and brain waves were recorded very much as on a polygraph. If the physiological response, which might have been great in the beginning, slowed down and resumed normal patterns as the more bloodthirsty scenes were viewed, the candidates were judged to have completed this stage of conditioning. The last phase of conditioning, Nehru said, was to indoctrinate the candidates to think of their potential enemies as inferior forms of life. By this stage, the candidates would have already been selected for assignment to particular countries. They would be shown films and given lectures which portrayed the customs and cultural habits of the foreign countries in a biased fashion. The people of those countries would be portrayed as enemies of the United States, were always spoken of in demeaning terms. They would often present it as if they were less than human. Their customs were ridiculed, and local leaders were presented as evil demagogues, even if they were legitimate political figures. According to Dr. Nehru, it took only a few weeks to indoctrinate susceptible candidates by this process. Those who were not susceptible to the conditioning were dropped earlier in the program and returned to their assignments. Nehru admitted that he did not have the necessary need to know as to where all the program men were sent, although at one point in his conversation with Peter Watson, Nehru specified that programmed assassins had been installed in the Athens embassy. He said his busiest time was when a large group of men went through such training towards the end of 1973, at the time of the Yom Kippur War. After the Oslo conference interview, Watson returned to London to file his story. Writing up the details, he found a few points which needed clarification, but he could not reach Nehru either at his home or in his laboratory. Watson then asked the U.S. Embassy in London to comment on the information Nehru had volunteered. The embassy passed the buck to the U.S. Navy. Within a few days, the Pentagon issued a categorical denial that the U.S. had ever engaged in psychological training or other types of training of personnel for assassins. They also denied any such training had ever taken place in either San Diego or in Naples. They said they too had been unable to contact the lieutenant, Commander Nehru, but they did confirm that was on half of the U.S. Regional Medical Center in Naples as a psychologist. But Dr. Zatani later offered to testify about what Nehru had told him as to the appropriate authorities. Watson was also approached later by a psychologist in Los Angeles who said he had seen the Pentagon denials and thought Watson would like to know that he had lent the San Diego psychologist a copy of his film on circumcision, which was used in the desensitized conditioning. A few days later, Nehru was located. He flew to London to discuss this matter ostensibly with Watson's paper, the Sunday Times, but instead, he held a press conference saying only that he had been talking in theoretical and not practical terms. He then flew back to the Naples base. After his return to Naples, U.S. Naval Headquarters in London offered the official explanation of Nehru's statement. Nehru had personal problems. A few days later, Watson was able to contact Nehru at the U.S. hospital in Naples, but he refused to elaborate on his disclosure. During the Oslo conference interview, Nehru had said several times that he was saying about the assassins coming out anyway. He was referring to the congressional disclosures about CIA assassination plots, but the fact that the Navy had been operating along lines similar to the CIA was known to the public, nor it has been subsequently been admitted. The details of the story Lieutenant Commander Nehru related have been strongly and categorically denied in all its subsequent queries of the Navy. It came as no surprise to many that the Navy had been interested in psychological research to help its men cope with stress. Several years before, one of the organizers of the Oslo Conference, Dr. Erwin Sarason, had been approached by the Navy to work on projects similar to Nehru's. At the time, the Navy had said nothing to him about programmed assassins. It said it wanted him to adapt his work for applications to spies. In response to that request, Sarason devised a film which showed how successful students asked questions in school. The film was shown to a group of juvenile delinquents for a period of time until they too learned how to pose the right questions. As a result, over the next 2 years, they did much better in their studies and got into trouble less. The control group, who had not seen the films, did just as poorly as the ones they had already shown the films. Since his symbolic modeling study had been successful, Sarason wanted to continue research and applied to the Office of Naval Research for more funding. A few weeks after his applications were received, Saracen was called by a Navy official who asked him if he would object to having his work classified. Saracen wondered why, and the Navy official told him his research would be most valuable to the Navy's neuropsychiatric laboratory in California, as spies were being trained there to resist interrogation. The naval official said that if Saracen would allow his work to be classified, he'd get all the funds he needed. But Saracen was interested in the peaceful scientific nature of his work, not in its military applications, so he refused to have the project classified. His goal was the exception rather than the rule. The federal government supports most scientific research in the United States. Enough psychologists and other social scientists have been asked questions about what their research is to be used for. Their main objective has been to get the grant so they could support themselves and their scientific curiosity. Since too many of them have been politically disinterested or naive, they have been easy prey for the cryptocracy. Lieutenant Commander Nauru was therefore but one in a long line of psychologists being employed for psychological warfare and illegal clandestine operations. Another sub-operation was the training of security officers at the Washington-based International Police Academy by psychologists and sociologists. The officers were supposedly being taught interrogation techniques for third world countries. Actually, it was a highly sensitive clandestine operation organized for using the training of U.S. spies. Congress closed the academy on January 1, 1974, after its real purpose was disclosed to the press. Another uncovered in the late 1960s was Project Camelot, purportedly a sociopolitical analysis of Chile, but actually designed to keep Chile free of communist leaders by discrediting them. Project Camelot played an important role in the overthrow of Salvador Allende and his democratically elected leftist government. In 1975, Congress questioned the Navy about its development of a questionnaire to survey attitudes toward death. Congressmen had learned that psychologists were eagerly working on such questionnaires, known as the Value of Life Study, that would allow the Navy to assess a recruit's willingness and ability to kill from the very first day he entered the service. In still another government-funded experiment, psychologists working for the Human Resource Research Organization in Alexandria, Virginia, had conducted a brutal series of stress training experiments in the early 1960s. In one experimental army, volunteers were taken on an airplane flight. Suddenly, the airplane engines failed, and the plane was forced to land abruptly on rough airstrip. The soldiers were later tested to see if this incident had caused a fear of flying. In another experiment, soldiers were taken out and lost in a forest. Suddenly, a huge forest fire engulfed them, so that the men found themselves off course and surrounded by fire. These men were tested to see if the experience had given them a fear of fire. In yet another experiment, soldiers were allowed to stray into artillery target areas. Shells were exploding all around them, and they had got to get out of the area by keeping cool and following orders. Since artillery shells fired from the distance of 20 miles away and are hard to control, the explosions were created by detonating underground charges triggered by remote control from a lookout point. After the realistic shelling was over, the men were tested to see if they suffered any discernible shell shock. During all these experiments, the men were under visual observation. In some, they also were telemetry devices which allowed scientists to measure their pulse rate, respiration, and other vital signs to determine the level of stress they were experiencing at the time when they were exposed to these dangers. As this battery of experiments became known to the outside world, public opinion and congressional pressure supposedly brought a stop to them. The military was not deterred, however, from other kinds of cruel and dangerous experimentation. It continued its stress research in spite of the bad publicity. While military stress testing must have developed useful insights into the psychological of warriors, its primary goal, as Lieutenant Commander Nauru pointed out, was the programming of assassins. These experiments were most useful in programming those men who were already inclined to kill. Hypnosis was still the only effective tool for motivating those men who were not inclined to kill, than for erasing the memory of their crimes or eliciting false confessions. Alarmed by evidence found in the assassinations of John and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King, Dr. Joseph L. Bernard of the Virginia Polytechnic Institute in 1968 questioned leading authorities on hypnosis about the possible use of hypnosis to motivate assassins. Bernard warned and wanted to know if political influences could be induced by hypnosis. Could people be hypno-programmed to operate unconsciously and take what seemed to be independent action? Could people be influenced to commit political assassination as a consequence of hypnotic influence? In his query, Bernard asked authorities to assume that a skilled hypnotist found a subject who was both a good hypnotic subject and highly capable in the use of weapons. They were to assume that the subject also had a deep hatred for some political personality prominent in the news. Burns' first question to the authorities was, could the hypnotist use hypnotic suggestions to persuade the weapons expert to kill the halted political personality at a time and under conditions suggested by the hypnotist? His second question was, could the hypnotic suggestion of this action be achieved in a way which could leave the subject assassin unconscious of and unable to recall the consciousness, the fact that his violent act was made as a consequence of hypnotic suggestion? The authorities who responded to Burns' question stated that they did think it's possible to induce a subject to kill. One expert said, I would say that a highly skilled hypnotist working with a highly susceptible subject could possibly persuade the subject to kill another human. Another expert went further, saying it was possible through post-hypnotic suggestion to make a subject unable to recall his act. There could be a conspiracy, one expert wrote, but a conspiracy of which principal was unaware. It may be that Byrne hit a nerve in the cryptocracy. His report, Assassination and Hypnosis, Political Influence or Conspiracy, was never published. But despite all efforts of the cryptocracy, slowly the secrets of mind control began to emerge. Soon there surfaced other evidence that there were indeed such things as programmed assassins. One such assassin made bold headlines in the front page of a newspaper in the Philippines. Illustration: CIA mastermind of Operation Mind Control, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, chaps with his attorney before he takes the stand at the hearings of MK Ultra before the Church Committee.